Testing, testing. Okay, so shall we start? Okay, I'm Roger Dingledine. This is Nick Mathewson. We've been working on a system called Tor, and a couple of people are clapping already. You might want to wait just a little bit till we demo it and show you that it works. Okay, so let me give you a bit of basic background about anonymity systems before I start talking about Tor in detail. Let me talk about Tor, then talk about some basic background, and then talk about the design goals and what we've done. So basically, we've got 20 nodes right now. Who here has heard of onion routing? Who here has heard of the Freedom Network? Excellent. Okay, so Tor is very much like the Freedom Network. We've got some improvements. One of the improvements is that we have free code that you can use right now. There are a couple of other design improvements also. So we've got 20 servers deployed around the world right now. We've got somewhere between a couple and a couple hundred users. At one point, a friend of mine at the UN put his division of the UN over the onion routing system, and it worked for a week or so. So it has been known to work. We've got a lot of improvements on the earlier design. It's free software under the modified BSD license, which means that you can get it and play with it and change it and use it and sell it and whatever you want to do. The design is not covered by the earlier onion routing patent, which was a bother to a lot of previous onion routing designs. We use socks. We are totally user space. You don't need to be root. We don't need kernel modifications. You take your normal Mozilla or whatever, you point it to socks proxy at the local Tor proxy, and you're off and running. We've got working code. It's small. It's reasonably clean. 14,000 lines of C does everything we need to do. We've got a design document that argues why we're doing it the way we're doing it. We've got a byte-level spec. If you want to build a Tor server or client that interacts with ours, you can build it, and it'll work just based on the spec. We have a Debian package. We're unstable. If you type apt-get install Tor enter, you are now running Tor as a client. Works on Linux, works on BSD, works on OS X, works on Cygwin. It has been known to work on Windows. I don't own Windows. I don't much care about Windows, but it has been known to work there. Feel free to submit a patch to make the newest one work if you like. It's user space. You don't have to be root. You don't have to have any weird permissions. You can run it on somebody else's computer just as you, so you can anonymize your traffic. It's for TCP, which means you can anonymize your web browsing, your SSH, your AIM, your IRC, your FTP, stuff like that. And each of those has been used. There's a URL here. If you happen to have your laptop out, feel free to pull it down and use it while I'm talking. I'll show you the URL again at the end. Okay, so a little bit of background. So when I talk to people like you, I say I work on anonymity software. When I talk to my grandmother, I work on privacy software. When I talk to companies, I work on security software. When I talk to the government, I work on traffic analysis resistant communications networks. It's all the same software. Each of them wants it for different reasons. So most of what you hear about at this sort of venue is people in oppressed countries, advocates talking about cancer, that sort of thing. They want to be able to privately communicate with other people without worries about some observer bothering them. If you're from the crypto community, you always talk about digital cash and threshold auctions and so on. Each of those starts with the sentence, assume an anonymous communication channel. And then they go off and do their design. So this is actually one such design that can actually be used in those situations. The government wants it for research, for law enforcement. They want to be able to check up on people without revealing that it's the CIA checking up on people. Businesses should care about this a lot more than they do right now, because right now they use VPNs and encryption and so on, and that doesn't get them what they want. If I'm wondering who in your company is looking at job sites, I maybe bribe a janitor at your ISP and I check out who's looking at job sites. I check out whether your CEO is talking to that other rumored buyout company, something like that. And if you use a VPN, you are getting encryption, but you're not hiding where the traffic is going, how much traffic there is, the patterns of it, and so on. Okay, anonymity is a network effect. You can't get it by yourself. If you're talking about an encryption system, if I want to encrypt something to you, I use the software, you use the software, we get the security of the encryption system. If we're talking about an anonymity system, it can't just be the two of us, me anonymously communicating to you. We need a lot of other people in the background to get good security. An interesting point here is we need to get a bunch of people who really don't care that much about anonymity, because there are only a couple dozen people in the world who seem to really care about it, and there are a bunch of people who kind of, sort of, maybe want it. We need to build something for them. We need to get enough of a user base that we actually have people to blend with. So the key realization there is that weak security, maybe faster systems or lower parameters or something like that, can get us better security, better anonymity, because we have more users. And it's conceivable that if you care a lot, you get better anonymity from running your own nodes. So maybe there's some incentive for people to run servers in the system also. Okay, onion routing. In a nutshell, it's an overlay network. We have a bunch of onion routers around the world. They're processes running on normal Linux machines or BSD machines or something. They talk TCP to each other. It's a clique topology, so every onion router is connected to every other onion router. So the user, Alice, wants to talk to some website, Bob. So she picks a path through the onion routing network, and she builds a virtual circuit through it. So she establishes a session key with each node one at a time through the network. I'll tell you a little bit more about that in a bit. So there's a layer of encryption at each hop, which means that every time, if you look at Alice's circuit in the middle or at the beginning or at the end, the bytes going over it all look completely different. Now, you can still count how many bytes there are, and you can still figure out the timing of them. So there are attacks in there. We'll get into that in a bit. But we have a little bit of basic protection against end-to-end attacks, and I'll tell you a little bit about our threat model after this slide. So Tor's goals. We didn't want to do a big design innovation thing. We just wanted to say onion routing is here. We want to build it well enough that it can work, and we want to actually get the code out there and get some users using it, because that's the only way we can actually know what's going to work and what people are going to want. So we wanted to not do any design work if we could help it. Unfortunately, we had to do quite a bit, and I'll tell you about that in a bit, but it wasn't as much as it could have been. There's plenty more that needs to be solved in the anonymity world. We wanted to deploy a test bed so we could have people test their ideas. What about reputation systems on anonymous communications networks? How do we know if those will work? Well, let's build one, and let's add on a reputation system and see. So the key here is design for deployment, build something so that we can actually deploy, and deploy something that people can actually and hopefully will want to use. Threat model. What are we trying to do here? So Alice is trying to talk to some website Bob. We want to protect against somebody who's watching Alice. We want to protect against somebody who's watching Bob and wondering which Alice it is who's going there. And we want to protect against some number of curious nodes in the middle. Unfortunately, I can't quantify that much better than that without a lot more security analysis here. But if you think of the anonymizer or other things where you're just trusting one node in the middle, then you can see that maybe if we can tolerate some bad nodes in the middle, then we're doing better. Okay, so we're TCP only. We're not covering all of the IP types packets. Freedom did UDP and ICMP and so on. We just do TCP. We could move to doing other things down the road, but that's a pretty major design change. And at this point, we're really portable and we're user space. We don't want any sort of kernel shim or other stuff to capture packets on your side. So it's a trade-off, and it's not a bad one so far. We're not as strong as the high latency systems that you heard about last year, like Mixmaster and Mixminion. They introduce delay so that you can get pretty good security even against somebody watching both Alice and Bob. If you're watching both Alice and Bob in our system, then you're doing really, really well. We're not peer-to-peer. There are a bunch of servers. There are a whole bunch more clients. Just because you're running the software doesn't mean that you're routing traffic for other people. You have to actually choose to do that. So that's a big misconception that when I tell people about this, they say, well, I don't want to run your software because I don't want to deal with liability issues. So you can be the client and not worry about that. We don't do protocol normalization. If you connect to a website and put your credit card information and your full name and your address and everything else and click submit, it goes there. Not my problem. We have produced communications anonymity. We hide your IP. We don't hide what you say. And there's some software that you can use like Provoxy and what Len was talking about earlier, the anonymizer provides to scrub that sort of data. We're not worried about steganography. If the adversary is watching Alice, then he knows that Alice is connecting to the Tor network. He just doesn't know where Alice is connecting from the Tor network. Okay, so we've got a couple of design improvements that we've made. In the original onion routing system, Alice chooses the path. She builds up what's called an onion. That's why it's called onion routing. And then it's a layered public key encryption data blob, and she throws it into the network. It arrives at the first hop. That first hop decrypts it, learns the key that it shares with Alice, learns the next hop, sends the decrypted blob to the next one, which decrypts it, learns the next hop, learns the key that it shares with Alice, and so on. And it lays the circuit at that point. On the other hand, Alice has to know the keys. So this means that somebody else can intercept the onion she sends and send it later, and it will lay exactly the same circuit. And now he can do this again and again and maybe learn where the circuit was sent to. So in our case, we do a telescoping design where we extend to one, then we extend to the second, and to the third, and so on. And we negotiate keys with each hop at that point. So we don't have to worry about replay detection. We don't do any mixing, no padding, no traffic shaping, nothing like that. Freedom spent a little while trying to do full traffic padding. They spent $100,000 in a month or something to ISPs to do that, and it sure wasn't worth it. We're trying to get volunteers to run servers, so we can't really ask people to do that sort of thing. And it's not clear that it's actually useful. If we are protected against everything but an adversary looking at both ends of Alice and Bob, then maybe we don't need anything more than that, and it's not worth the usability trade-off. So in a previous onion routing design, you built a new circuit for every TCP stream you wanted to do. Every image you pulled off of CNN.com was a new circuit. It involved new public key cryptography, and there are also anonymity dangers from building lots of circuits in lots of places, and each of them going to your CNN.com destination. So we multiplex within a given circuit quite a few, and there are some trade-offs there. So we have this notion of a leaky pipe circuit topology. It used to be that you build your circuit all the way out, and then you connect from the end, and that's that. In our case, we can direct cells partway down the circuit. We can say, please send a dummy cell partway down and have it dropped. Or please send a begin cell partway down and you can exit the circuit halfway down. So this means potentially that you could have many different connections coming out of the same circuit. And one node doesn't know that multiple of them are coming out of the circuit because they're coming out of different nodes. On the other hand, it's not clear if this is dangerous or useful, so we're not actually making use of it. But the design allows it. So we've got this congestion control notion. Basically, we have simple rate limiting, which means that when you install a client or a server, you can say, this is the bandwidth I want to allow this thing to use. So you can put it on your co-loc'd ISP machine, and you don't have to worry that it'll flood everything. Plus, there's a notion of internal congestion control. The worry is, imagine there are 15 evil Alices, and they all set up their circuits so they all collide at one poor node. And then they try to shove data through as quickly as possible. Now, this poor node is quickly going to get overflowed because he's trying to put everything down this one pipe. And he has to buffer everything as much as each Alice sends. That's no good. So we have a congestion control algorithm that prevents that sort of thing to some extent. And again, it's a trade-off between how much buffer we expect each node to have and how efficient and fast the system is. So we've got this notion of directory servers. How do you know what the onion routers are? How do you know what the servers are in the system? We're solving the introduction problem that if from the peer-to-peer community, you might be familiar with that term. So Alice wants to use the network, so she goes to one of the directory servers and pulls down a list of who's connected right now and what their keys are, where their servers are right now, and so on. The directory servers also have the job of approving new servers. Because if the adversary can show up and sign up 500 nodes, and we have 20 honest nodes, then it's quite likely that Alice will choose an all bad path, and that's no good. So we have to have some sort of human intervention at this point, otherwise it's all going to fall apart. Okay, we've got variable exit policies. When you set up your server, you can choose what sort of things you want to allow to exit at you, if anything. You could set up a server as a middleman node, meaning nothing can exit at you. All you will do is relay traffic from users or onion routers to other onion routers. Or you can set it up to allow any sort of outgoing connection or anything in between. Right now, by default, we disable port 25 outgoing from all of the servers. Because every time I talk to people about this, they say, well, aren't you going to destroy the world because you're going to allow spammers to spam everybody anonymously? We don't allow connections to SMTP. So even if it is a reasonable thing for spammers to want to use, and I would claim they're doing much better breaking into North Korea and sending spam from there, then Tor is probably not the right vector for them. End-to-end integrity checking. Once upon a time, there was an onion routing network that had just a stream cipher as its encryption. And stream ciphers are you generate the ciphertext, you generate the cipher, and you XOR the plaintext, and then you end up with the ciphertext. And that's great, except if the adversary can guess what the plaintext is, he can XOR out the plaintext and XOR in his own plaintext. So, for instance, if I'm connecting to an FTP site and I'm typing DIR, and the adversary is maybe one of the nodes in the circuit that I've picked, or maybe he's some guy on the network, maybe he's a telco or something, he can guess that I'm typing DIR, he can XOR that out of my stream, XOR in RM star, and I don't know anything is different. I mean, that's that, and I've now done something that I really didn't mean to do. Now, there are protocols like SSH that have built-in integrity checking, but if you're doing FTP, then you don't. So we fixed this by using TLS on the links, SSL TLS on the links, and also an internal end-to-end integrity checking thing where we've got a hash of everything that you've seen so far, so each side can verify that nothing's been messed up on the links. Okay. How am I doing for time? I have no idea when I started or ended or... Pardon me? Okay, great. Okay, so I've got a notion of rendezvous points. Everything I've talked to you about so far is implemented. Rendezvous points are vaporware, so I'm only going to tell you a little bit about them, and maybe you'll hear about them next year once I've built them and they work.
We have a spec.
We have a spec. We have a design. It's vaporware. Give us a little while, and we'll build them, and then you can believe us that they'll work. So the idea of rendezvous points is, so far I've been talking to you about Alice wanting to connect to Bob's web server, and Alice wants to stay anonymous. What if Bob has an Apache, and he wants to offer his web service without anybody knowing what his IP is, without anybody knowing what country his computer lives in? So at this point, rather than Alice choosing the path through the network and then knowing where Bob is and going to Bob, Bob can instead onion route out to a rendezvous point. And then Alice also can onion route to that rendezvous point or can connect to it directly if she doesn't care about her anonymity. And at this point, she can interact with Bob's Apache server without knowing where Bob is. And there are more complex details to it, for instance. For instance, the smear resistance property. I was talking to some people who run remailers who are interested in running this rendezvous service. And as I just described it, they're not going to run it because Bob onion routes out somewhere, and there's some poor rendezvous point server who actually serves all of Bob's content, whatever it is that Bob is serving. And these people don't want to offer that sort of service. But if we add another layer of indirection, then it is less scary for them to run it. Basically, Bob onion routes out somewhere, Alice picks a rendezvous point, and then notifies Bob of it, and then Bob can either choose to go there or not. And the properties we get out of that are the actual rendezvous point that is transmitting the data back and forth doesn't know Alice, doesn't know Bob, and can't read anything that's being transmitted because Alice and Bob negotiate a key before they go to that point. So it's application transparent, or at least the spec and the design intended to be application transparent, which means you don't have to mess with your Apache at all. This will work with whatever server you want to offer. But ask me about that one later, and we'll have some more code for it. Okay, so whenever I talk to people about anonymous communication systems, they say, well, what about this random thing that they came up with last week? How does that compare to the one that I'm working on? And it's a hard thing to compare because in a lot of cases, the threat model that people are trying to design against is unclear, and whether they'll have users is unclear, and how their design actually works is unclear. But so here is one way of evaluating these sort of systems. Imagine the adversary owns C of the N nodes in your network. Given a random Alice and a random Bob, what's the chance that the adversary is able to learn that it's Alice talking to Bob? Now, in the case of Freedom and Tor, where Alice chooses the entire path, the chance that the adversary wins is the adversary owns the first node and owns the last node. So there's a C over N chance of owning the first node if she picks it randomly, and a C over N chance of owning the last node if she picks it randomly. So now we're looking at C squared over N squared as a security protection. And that's pretty good. I don't know how to do anything better if the adversary owns some of the nodes. On the other hand, there are some other designs like Peekabooty and 6.4 where if Alice chooses a bad first node, then the adversary can force her to choose bad nodes for the rest of her circuit. And that means that the adversary will own the first node and will own the last node, and he'll be able to figure out who Alice is talking to. So in those designs, we're looking at C over N, which is if there are 100 nodes and the adversary owns 10 of them. In the Tor design, we're looking at a 1% compromise rate. And in the Peekabooty design or 6.4, we're looking at a 10% compromise rate. So that's a pretty big difference, especially as the network scales. So there's a design called JAP, or Web Mixes, that has code deployed. They have a bunch of mixes running in Germany. And they use a cascade design. So rather than Alice saying, well, there are 20 nodes, I'll pick this one, this one, this one, this one, and that's my circuit, they instead say, there are these five nodes, everybody starts on number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and exits. So everybody goes into the cascade, goes through it, and then goes out of it. On the other hand, if you're talking about an adversary who's trying to link Alice to Bob, and he can choose which nodes he wants to compromise, if he can compromise two of them, the first one and the last one, then he wins. So in this case, we're looking at a certainty of compromise, assuming he owns some of the nodes, assuming he owns more than one of the nodes. And just for completeness, we put in anonymizer here. Anonymizer, the basic idea is it's a one-hop trusted proxy, and everybody goes in and everybody goes out. And if you can monitor both sides and can do timing correlation or whatever, then you're in business. So basically, the certainty of failure is certain if the adversary owns at least one of the nodes. In the case of the anonymizer, in some sense, there is only one node. So either you are totally screwed or you're totally safe. So it really depends on the threat model you want. Okay, so there's some future work. I talked about directory servers briefly. Imagine there are 5 directory servers run by 5 different people around the world. If you want to join the network as a server, you have to convince each of them that you're a trustworthy person, you're not actually being run by the adversary, and then they will allow you to join the network. On the other hand, if each directory server acts independently, then the adversary can compromise one of the directory servers and have it tell you something different. It can have you tell you all about the bad nodes that nobody else is willing to list or something like that. So we need some way of getting all the directory servers to synchronize what they're telling you and sign it with a threshold of signatures that you'll believe or something like that. At this point, once we've got a bunch of signatures on the directory, then we can cache it out to every other onion router, and you don't have this bottleneck of you have to go to one of these 3 or one of these 5 servers in order to learn who's in the network. Scalability. Right now, Tor is probably not very scalable. I imagine we could handle maybe 200 servers. I imagine we could handle maybe 10,000 users. Now, granted, nobody's ever had 10,000 users in an anonymity system like this, so who knows if we'll ever get to that point. But if we do, then there are some other designs that we can work on that can maybe make it a bit more scalable. On the other hand, everything that is highly scalable falls into the C over N category, not the C squared over N squared category so far. More research remains. What we'd also like to do for future work is work on being able to transport things that aren't TCP.
Low on time.
Okay. We want to be able to transport things like UDP. I don't actually expect you to be able to play Quake over Tor, but it'd be nice if it at least supported it. We'd like to implement the rendezvous points because they're just vaporware, as I said. And I want to make everything work better in general because right now it's a growing network and it's kind of clunky at times. So, again, we have working code. We've got a design doc. We've got a byte-level spec. If you're running Debian, apt-get install tor enter. And as a final plug, if you're interested in this sort of thing, there's a workshop in Toronto at the end of May, petworkshop.org, on anonymity systems in general. Okay, so Nick here has a demo. So we were trying to figure out what sort of things we wanted to demo because, I mean, obviously, look, it's a web browser. We're web browsing. Isn't it great? Is not entirely a good demo. So I picked up on the fact that every time I talked to people who I'd told about Tor before, they said, oh, yeah, I've been meaning to do that, but I don't have enough time. So we're going to take it from the tarball, and 3 minutes later we will be using Tor. And maybe that will be convincing for those people that they can actually... use Tor also.
All right.
What's up?
The display on my LCD doesn't match the display up there, so I'm going to, for my first trick, I will install Tor blind.
Click. Okay.
Run. Roger, we'll start taking questions.
Okay. I should probably give this to people.
So it doesn't support it doesn't support UDP. Does that mean it doesn't support DNS? And if it doesn't support DNS, what's the point?
That's correct. It does not support independent DNS queries. So if you're using a program called Privoxy, which uses SOX4A rather than SOX4 or SOX5, then when you're in Mozilla, you type in google.com. It passes the hostname, google.com, to the Tor client, and that passes it to the far end, which resolves it and connects to it. So, for instance, we've got a node in the Netherlands, and I went to Google a couple days ago, and I got the Nederlandish Google because that's what it thinks Google should be from there. On the other hand, for some applications, it does the DNS resolve before it connects to the SOX proxy. And that means that Alice is shouting, I'm about to anonymously go to google.com, and then she goes somewhere. And if you're observing her, then you can probably guess where she's going to go. So you have to pay attention to that when you're using it. It would be nice to be able to handle DNS. We could play with the DNS server or something, but I don't want to deal with that because it's not very portable.
Isn't one of the possible paths to scalability having a sort of a meta level above a single onion router and have many onion routers with a directory service to point you to one random trusted onion router? So each one gets to a certain size and then you have 500 of them.
You mean, wouldn't it be nice if we had a bunch of independent onion routing networks and the directory server knows about each of them and then you can work within one of them?
Right, and that lets you avoid the scaling issues of any single onion routing.
Yes, onion routing network. That could work. I would like to make it so that all of the users of the entire system blend with each other. But we could have a bunch of little networks where maybe 10,000 people blend with each other at a time. That might be a fine way of scaling it.
Do you have any latency numbers?
It really depends on what you're connecting to and whether you get a good circuit or a bad circuit. A while ago, when we had only 10 nodes in the system, it was very, very fast. Originally, we went through MIT only, and we were faster than most people because routing from you to MIT to Bob is faster than routing from you to Bob in general. But as we are growing, things are becoming a little bit more sporadic, and that's what we have to play with. You can use it right now to web browse, and it's pretty much the same as web browsing directly. If you SSH, if you get a good circuit, you can't tell the difference. If you get a slow circuit that bounces from you to Austria to San Francisco to the Netherlands to your SSH box, then maybe you'll notice some latency. But it's not horrible. It depends on how much anonymity you want, what you're willing to deal with.
So this is a follow-on to the latency question right here. So you said that one of the primary goals is low latency. If you have to set up a telescoping circuit, as you talked about at the beginning, where you have to set up a session with each node on your circuit,
yes.
is the connection, the initial session setup, low latency too, or is it only the actual communication?
The circuits are all built in the background. So you build the circuit, you extend to each place, and then you leave that circuit alone, and you build another one, and maybe you've got three or four in the background that you haven't used yet. And now when a request comes in, a TCP stream comes in, then you send the begin cell right down a circuit that's open and ready for you. And as soon as you've done that, then you mark that one as dirty, and pretty soon you're going to say, hey, wait a minute, I've got only dirty circuits, I better make another one, because soon he might ask me to do a request. So all of that's done in the background, out of the path of the user.
So if your probability of compromise is C over N squared, then it seems that's the same probability of compromise you'd get if you had exactly two nodes in your path. Is there any security advantage to picking a longer path than that?
So the theory for our threat model was we said to ourselves, if the adversary can see Alice and can see Bob, then we're screwed. Let's not try to protect against that. If there's any attack that's harder for the adversary to do than that, let's not worry about that either. But if there's an attack that's easier than that, we have to resolve it. So the idea is, if there are only two nodes, then the easier attack might be for the first guy to make a phone call to the second guy, because he knows that everybody picks paths of two. And he knows that all he has to do is make the phone call and he can link Alice to Bob. So once we have a third node in the middle, paths are generally length three at this point. Once we have a third node in the middle, then it's the easiest attack to get the first and the last.
So a couple minutes later, and it's probably a little faster for me because I've done it before, but it's probably a little slower for me because I couldn't actually see the screen while I was doing it. Tor is running. Mozilla Firebird is connecting via Tor. You can tell this because showmyip.com says that our IP is 18.244.0.188, which is Roger's machine Moria in a closet in some poor undergraduate's dormitory at MIT. Let's see if we can get it to connect from somewhere else.
So you build multiple streams over the same circuit for a while. So that's for efficiency reasons. Otherwise, we'd be making a new circuit with public key operations for each time. So we will be reusing this circuit for a while until we decide that it is too dirty. It has been around for too long. The chance that the adversary is going to be tracking it from the beginning to the end has gotten too high. And at that point, we may switch circuits. Depending on, pardon me? Can you click Shift Reload or the equivalent? While we're having Nick click Reload, are there other questions?
How many nodes do you have in a path, and is there a possibility that you would reuse the nodes in one route?
Right now, our path length is 3 hops to a path. And we never reuse a node in the path. Because if you did, then obviously the C squared over N squared would no longer be the case.
It seems to me that you have to place a lot of trust in the people who sign the directory server lists.
Yes.
That raises centralization issues. It raises
That's
that
correct.
Kind of worry.
The worry is, there we are from...
We are not lying to you.
Where is that?
There are more than one node. 128, 187,
I don't know where that is. It's one of those nodes. So the question is, isn't this a centralized system, in fact, because there's some guy named Roger who decides who gets to be the servers? And to some extent, the answer is yes, it is a centralized system. It would be nice down the road. We're planning to decentralize the directory servers so there are 9 of them and there are 9 humans, and you have to compromise all 9 or 5 of the 9 or something like that in order to get as many people signed up as you like. I would love to hear from you a design that can get us C squared over N squared and let people sign up when they want to sign up. Every design I've seen that lets people sign up randomly ends up with a C over N security.
And we have time for 2 more questions.
So the firewall and NAT question. Hi, Roger. Yeah. Lots of people, aside from being behind the evil NAT stuff, are behind one sort of firewall or another. Mm-hmm. What does your onion routing stuff do to make it possible for somebody inside a firewall to get out? Or does it? And also, does it make it possible to run a server inside a firewall or behind a NAT or anything like that?
It depends on the firewall you've got. Many people are on firewalls that let them connect out. They just don't let them connect out on every port or something like that. Currently, if you can connect to TCP 9001, then you're able to connect to the other onion routers. We should, at some point, I recognize, build an HTTP transport so that you can get out from the really restrictive firewalls. But there are plenty of people behind firewalls that try to protect them rather than keep them from being useful people. And you can use Tor just fine from behind those. But at some point, yes, we will be doing the HTTP transport. As to your Bob running a hidden service behind something, if he can onion route out, then he can offer a service as well. Because it's just the onion routing connection going out. And then rather than talking to the Apache server on the other side, he's got the Apache server, and it's Alice talking to the Apache server on his side. So it's totally symmetric with respect to that. Did that answer the question? Great.
You say you use a 3-step path with it. Have you done any analysis on longer paths and whether the security is higher or lower or anything of that sort?
Well, I sort of answered that when I was answering his question earlier. If you have a path of length 1, then obviously you're not doing too well. If you have a path of length 2, then you can begin to get the C squared over N squared. but perhaps the best attack is not getting the first and last, but is getting the first and making a phone call to the second, because you know that people are only going to be using two hops. If you've got three hops to the path, then that's probably not the best attack. Probably the best attack is getting the first and last. If you've got more than one intermediate node, then you're slowing things down, and you will shed all of your users because they will hate you and the system won't work. So we have some compromise between usability and security.
Well, we don't have any evidence that four helps much more than three.
Yeah.
So there were such evidence, we might go to more than three.
Yeah. A lot of this is... it's hard to figure out for sure what's going on in terms of security in anonymity systems. Analyzing them is extremely hard. That's true. Okay, so another way you might want to use this system, rather than you running on your PC and your cable modem or whatever, is you are an organization. You are IBM, and you want to be onion routing your traffic so that somebody watching you doesn't realize you're about to buy Apple. So you want to run an enclave level, a firewall level onion router. And that means that all the people inside go through that, and from there they get anonymized, and maybe you're talking to Apple, so Apple runs one also. And you go from IBM through an onion routing circuit to Apple to the person you're talking to at Apple. So in that situation, you probably want to use five nodes right now, we're thinking, one being your enclave, one being Apple's enclave, and then three in the middle, because three is a good number for anonymity. Or maybe if you're the only one running an enclave and Apple isn't, then you want four. You want yours and then three more with the destination. That's still up for debate, but it seems bad if you're IBM and Apple and you've only got one node in the middle, because then that node says, that's interesting, IBM is talking to Apple. And now you've got the single adversary problem you had before.
Thank you.
That's it. Okay, talk to me afterwards. We've got plenty of time for questions.